crimes of brutality against civilians. Moti Abu Musabbih, the central area of Gaza Strip.
A unifying figure, no doubt, a role model and a symbol of hope, self-confidence and courage. On his fourth martyrdom anniversary, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani is a source of inspiration more than ever. The reason why Tehran University has decided to recognize and reward prominent figures with outstanding works focused on the top commander himself and his way of life as freedom seekers worldwide and in particular resistance fighters in Gaza continue to look up to him and follow in his footsteps.
Today, the occupying Israeli regime and the Americans who were talking about destroying Hamas are sending messages and indirectly negotiating with Hamas about how to manage Gaza after the war and how to exchange prisoners. This all means that the axis of resistance has won this war, and once again resistance has paid off, the resistance that Martyr Qasem Soleimani stood up for.
Martyr Soleimani is not just a person. Martyr Soleimani is a school of thought. It's important for us to see the world through his eyes and follow in his footsteps. That is why I have published a book, including my research on Martyr Soleimani's leadership style, that can be used as a reference for our future leaders. I believe we need more people using his methods in leadership for us to be successful.
The 20 laureates were picked out of a short list of 150 prominent figures who have made great efforts to shed light on the different aspects of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, both as a person and as a hero and the top commander that he was.
Haj Qasem Soleimani is one of the most influential people of our time. In Palestine, and particularly in Gaza, we owe our resistance to him. That is why we call him the Martyr of Al-Quds. Young boys and girls in Gaza see him as a role model.
Martyr Soleimani is one of the greatest people in history, a unique person and a true hero. I think he is a great role model for our younger generation, and it's our duty to pass on his teachings to them.
He's very much loved by people all over the world, not just in Iran, but internationally. He's a symbol of resistance against imperialism, against hegemony, against arrogance, against occupation, against apartheid, against genocide, and he continues to fulfill that role years after he was assassinated by the criminal American regime.
In West Asia, many people who are fighting for freedom against global imperialism see their path to victory through his teachings and his way of life. And Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani will continue to be a symbol of resistance for generations to come. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
In a poignant display of solidarity, Christians residing in Pakistan have opted to hold traditional Christmas celebrations with simplicity due to Israel's ongoing onslaught in Gaza. Their decision is a symbolic gesture of empathy and concern for relentless challenges faced by the people of Gaza during this festive season.
The message of Jesus Christ was the message of peace and security. We need peace in Palestine. On this Christmas, our hearts are heavy and we feel compelled to express our brothers and sisters in Gaza.
Pastors from various Christian communities across Pakistan gathered in the capital city Islamabad on Sunday for a special joint prayer meeting to appeal for a ceasefire in Gaza.
In the spirit of Christmas, we gather here to raise our voices in prayer for the innocent lives affected by the conflict in Gaza. Our prayers are with the people of Palestine, and we stand united in our plea for a ceasefire and lasting peace.
Meanwhile, a diverse gathering of people also expressed solidarity with the oppressed people of Gaza through the display of vibrant balloons, each carefully adorned with messages of solidarity and support.
The situation of Gaza is extremely distressing. It is genocide, it is violence, and it is extreme power play in a region that does not deserve this at all.
Ceasefire now!
Demanding an immediate ceasefire, the individuals of all ages called on the world to halt the ongoing genocide of Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip.
Christians in Pakistan are using this Christmas to advocate for peace in Gaza rather than engaging in traditional celebrations. The gesture underscores that humanity is not confined by religious or national boundaries, but it is all about showing compassion for the people in distress. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
For the 11th weekend in a row since the start of Israel's most brutal war on Gaza, rallies were held in Sydney and Melbourne in support of Palestinians. In Sydney, thousands of people gathered once again in Central Business District's Hyde Park for a rally dubbed Stop the Genocide in Gaza, called by the Palestine Action Group, an activist formation committed to supporting Palestine and opposing Israel apartheid. A number of other groups also joined the rally, calling on Western governments to finally put some pressure on Israel for its ongoing violence, genocide and oppression against Palestinians.
I think the Australian government continues to be a firm backer of Israel, to their great shame. So clearly, again, 11 weeks of massive protests, the likes of which we've never seen before, is having an impact, and they're feeling the pressure, so they're shifting their rhetoric a bit.
The rally, attended by school union representatives, was also joined by a group of outraged Sydney-based Jews who hold anti-Zionist views.
So-called posture of the Western countries and so-called international law is, in my opinion, just pointless. And it's appalling, but quite frankly. We've got a genocide happening right in front of us.
Some of the speakers acknowledged that Palestinians are experiencing the same struggle as the indigenous people in Australia. Many hundreds of thousands of Aboriginals have been killed or forcibly removed from their land and their families at the hands of colonial authorities over the past 200 years.
People at the Sydney rally praised South Africa for filing a case against Israel at the International Court of Justice, accusing Tel Aviv of committing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. More than 21,500 civilians have been killed by the Israeli army so far, including nearly 9,000 children and 6,500 women.
I mean, it is genocide. They should go to the International Criminal Court because they are committing war crimes. War crimes many, many times over. I mean, it's obvious, you know, this is the obvious to ordinary people that this is a massive ongoing war crime.
Also on Saturday, a rally in solidarity with the Gazans was held at Melbourne's State Library for the 11th week in a row. Max Civili, Sydney.
In response to the call of the Free Palestine Movement, massive crowds gathered in the Yarmouk refugee camp near Damascus to show their confidence in the strength and determination of the resistance in Gaza, confirming that the Al-Aqsa Flood operation is a fateful battle that ignited hope in their hearts, as it brings them closer to the defeat of the Israeli occupation and their return to their homeland.
We are here to support people in the Gaza Strip and voice our unconditional support to the resistance groups. After nearly 3 months of fighting, it's clear that the Zionist regime is facing defeat. The Al-Aqsa Flood operation revealed that Israel's collapse is imminent.
The Israeli occupation politically has nothing now, military has nothing now, security has nothing, economy has nothing, and we also tell the world that October 7th is the gate for the liberation of the whole Palestine, from the river to the sea.
Participants confirmed that the excess of resistance embraces the Palestinian struggle and supports all resistance factions, including the Al-Qassam Brigades and Al-Quds Brigades. They expressed their anger at the Israeli atrocities against the people of Gaza, emphasizing their adherence to the right of return and liberating Al-Quds.
Syrians and Palestinians have shown their absolute faith in the victory of the Resistance Front and Al-Aqsa Front operation, not only as a path to liberate the occupied lands, but also as inspiration for the generations to come. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Thousands took to the streets of Austria's capital Vienna to express solidarity with Gaza on Saturday. These demonstrations were special in the sense that they were the first street protests after a court ruling removing some restrictions on acts of solidarity with Palestine. Since October 7, police and government have been imposing strict sanctions on protests and even banned expressions of solidarity with Gaza entirely. Following a demonstration on November 5 in the city of Salzburg, charges were filed against participants who held signs showing Palestine in its pre-1947 borders. Police argued the banner constitutes a criminal offense due to incitement to hatred for denying the Israeli regime's right to exist. The tide has now turned. The court dropped the charges a few days ago, arguing they violated freedom of expression. It ruled that it is lawful to carry signs showing maps of Palestine at demonstrations. The ruling comes only days after similar verdicts in Germany, where courts in Cologne and Munster ruled that the slogans "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free," "Child murderer Israel," and "Stop the genocide in Gaza" can be freely expressed in the country. German police have previously used these slogans to prohibit protests for Gaza, creating worries that the free speech is under threat.
I'm here because I feel a duty to stand against the destruction of life, the environment, and dignity, because this destruction is being done in my name. And instead of making me safer, it's making it more dangerous for me to live in the diaspora.
While their governments stand staunchly on the side of the Zionist regime of Israel, thousands of people in Austria and Germany keep marching for Palestine. Experts say these demonstrations have placed some real pressure on European governments, pushing them to distance themselves from Israeli atrocities.
The court rulings are a welcome boost for the Palestine solidarity movement in Europe, where concerns are growing over a breakdown on Palestine supporters. Following recent court decisions, it is believed the coming year will see more and more demonstrations for Gaza. Dieter Reinisch, Vienna.
Iraq is marking the fourth anniversary of the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. During an event attended by high-ranking Iraqi and Iranian officials, the two commanders were prized as a role model for all generations.
Today we stand alongside our Iranian brothers to remember our leaders General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, whose memories are engraved in our minds. And although they are gone physically, their thoughts are still with us.
Former Iraqi Prime Minister Nour al-Maliki admired the two leaders and their role in the fight against terrorism in the region. The chief of Iraq Popular Mobilization Units, Faleh al-Fayyad, also addressed the ceremony. He said the role of General Qasem Soleimani and his companion was essential in standing against Daesh. Several Iraqi lawmakers were also present at the event. They said the two commanders' determination to fight against terrorists irritated their backers.
Today we remember the pure souls that fought against terror and defeated something that made terror supporters mad. That's why they committed such a cowardly act of killing our leaders in Iraq.
They expect that by assassinating our leaders, they will weaken our resistance, but they have failed to achieve their goals, and even after committing their cowardly act, it did nothing more than adding strength to us.
The attendees also condemned the latest attacks on anti-terror forests in Iraq and Syria, which led to the martyrdom of Sayyid Razi Mousawi. They demanded an immediate end to the U.S. military presence in Iraq, and they argued that this is the only solution to stop the continuous attacks on Iraqi forces and end violations against Iraq's sovereignty. They also expressed their solidarity with the Palestinians and condemned the Israeli war on Gaza. A huge crowd have gathered today to commemorate the fourth anniversary of the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and Al-Hajj Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. The legacy of the anti-terror icons continue to live on, inspiring people in the region to stand up for the oppressed. Muslim Salim, Baghdad.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
This one lay. Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, as 2023 comes to an end, this year will be forever remembered as the one which exposed the absolute hypocrisy of the rules-based system and all of the organizations created under its umbrella. From women's rights to children's rights to free speech, all of these rights that many thought existed in the world, we've seen that they are null and void. When it comes to the collective West regarding the East and global South, this is especially true as we enter a new year and the Zionist genocide continues to take place against Palestinians almost 3 months after it started and is being met by collective silence and our inaction from the West to stop it. We're going to take a look at these last 2.5 months on the Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Richard Falk, former UN Special Rapporteur on Palestine Human Rights out of Santa Barbara, California. And Shabir Rizvi, political analyst out of London. Well, thank you both for being with us. I'd like to start this off with Richard Falk. Well, you are a former UN Special Rapporteur on Palestine Human Rights. Did you ever think that you would be witnessing what you have been these last 2.5 months, this type of genocide and basically nothing being done to stop it?
My darkest form of imagination could not reach the horror show that we've been witnessing for almost 3 months, as you say. It's the most transparent spectacle of genocide that the people of the world have ever been exposed to. And the complicity of the global West, particularly the US and UK, shocks even a critic like myself, because it exposes not only the hypocrisy of the rules-based world, which was always very suspect. It was geopolitical rules for the powerful, and some kind of accountability to international law for the weak. And now it has become something that is indulgent of genocide when it's committed by friends and critical of human rights of any sort if they are attributable to adversaries or enemies. So we're at a very dark place in human history, I fear.
Yes, indeed. Well, Shabir, I mean, can you believe that you're still witnessing this genocide that started on October 7th and we're about to start a new year and it still hasn't stopped?
Hello, good evening. Thanks for the invitation. Firstly, condolences to the families of the martyrs and also our sort of heartfelt pain for those who are suffering the amputations and all kinds of other bloodletting which is being inflicted on the Palestinians, both in Gaza and the West Bank, as I keep pointing out, that it's not just in Gaza that is taking place. Obviously, the numbers are horrendous. But as our friend from the USA said, we are at a dark place. Not only at a dark place, but just to quote William Shakespeare, when he said, "I'm sick when I do look at thee." He was really talking, Demetrius was speaking to Helena and a midsummer's night dream at that time. So it's really the, you know, we feel the sickness when we look at our politicians, our media pundit in the legacy media in the West, and also all the chattering classes, that they really have not only abandoned, but actually the the words that they used to use of human rights and of sort of freedom of speech and all kinds of flowery words, the veil has been removed, or veils have been removed from them very clearly. And I think people in the South and the East part of the world are realizing that these were not just hypocritical words, but they were words to hoodwink us into thinking that the West has some moral and ethical thinking behind it. But the reality is that now that we are seeing this happening on a daily basis, minute by minute, hour by hour, people are realizing that how inhuman the politicians are. They really have no heart at all, thinking about it. You know, people keep on talking about that Israel has a right to defend itself. Yes, Israel has a right to kill babies. Israel has a right to murder over 100 journalists. Israel has a right to kill, 22,000 people. Israel has a right to kill pregnant mothers. Israel has a right to do all the heinous crimes that one could list. And, you know, the list would be very long. But the reality is that Israel is being allowed to get away. But I think they are only going to get away for a limited period of time. I think come 2024, the support that the Palestinians are getting globally from the ordinary people, not from the politicians or the elite or the chattering classes, as I said, but really the ordinary people are feeling that this cannot go on in the manner that it is. And again, the whole sort of hysterical Hezbollah, which is now being proven to be completely false, and lies upon lies, that again, that veil which has been sort of given to the world for the last 75 years has come off in the last, you know, less than 75 days. So people are realizing that it is just that, you know, Zionism is equal racism. Zionism is equal colonialism. Zionism is equal to imperialism. Zionism is really the, the problem in West Asia. It's not the Palestinians. Palestinians are the indigenous people of that land. And again, it's not a Jewish or Muslim sort of war. It really is a war against an occupier, an usurper, and a nation which is built on people who are not part of that land.
Okay.
And this has become
stay with me,
Shabir.
Stay with me, Shabir. Let me get Richard back in on this. Well, Richard, how did we get here? Or were we always here just that we can see clearer the reality? Because if we look at the rules-based system that was set up after World War II, and we see the veto power that the UN Security Council members have always had. Were we always here, but there was enough of the facade in place that people didn't understand it? Or what's your assessment of this difference between we see reactions, what happened, for example, when Russia invaded Ukraine, as opposed to the reaction towards the Zionist regime and what this genocide they're committing against the Palestinians?
Well, you're posing a really important series of questions, and there's no simple answer. I think, in one sense, the logic of the Zionist project always had an end game that is very destructive of the Palestinian people. It wanted a Jewish supremacy state that corresponded with a vision of biblical times, a kind of mythic promised land, and in a post-colonial era, to try to dispossess the indigenous people is really itself a major crime. And Israel has recently, with justification, been called the last settler colonial undertaking. So that's a background. And then in the foreground is the capture of the Zionist project by the most extremist elements in it, which couldn't complete the project without this kind of genocidal onslaught. And there's every reason to suspect that the Hamas attack of October 7th was allowed to happen and even facilitated in its execution by the non-arrival of the Israeli forces. The settler mentality that has captured the Zionist movement and has made its way to the pinnacles of power in Israel was seeking a pretext for what one might call a second Nakba, a second wave of dispossession and creating a final phase in the Israeli effort to take over the West Bank, which is the primary goal, and to perhaps reoccupy or at least depopulate Gaza. It now has some importance economically and strategically in relation to the Suez Canal, in relation to the offshore oil and gas. So there are economic reasons, and settlers on the West Bank are really real estate operators are promising coastline villas to Jewish resettlers in a new wave of settlement. So we don't know how the outcome will be phased. And then the hardest question, and the most important one in a sense, is the explanation of the complicity crimes committed by the Western countries. I think the whole relationship to the region was changed by two events. One was the Iranian Revolution in 78-79, and the second was the 1967 war, in which Israel, for the first time, emerged not as a strategic burden, which it had been in relation to the oil producers and to the Islamic world generally, but suddenly it became a strategic asset. And with Iran, the prior allied special friend under the Shah's rule, no longer present there, it joined these forces of support that had built up after the Holocaust for a Jewish sanctuary, a kind of liberal guilt in the West. I just want to say because it fused that liberal guilt with strategic military interests in the region and created a new kind of commitment by the U.S. To Israel and going along with whatever Israel did, even to this extent.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, Shabir, when we look at what has happened since October 7th and the increase in pro-Palestinian activism in these Western countries and a greater awareness of Israeli crimes, and not only awareness of Israeli crimes, but the complicity of their own country's involvement, your assessment of where this will possibly go in 2024?
That's a very interesting question, because obviously, as we have been observing since day one, if you like, after 7th of October, there have been huge demonstrations in major European cities and in North America, Australia and New Zealand. So it's becoming very clear that the ordinary masses are not in tune with the ruling elite in the respective countries. So there's a huge, if you like, a democratic gap that has been created. Secondly, what is happening is that the, as I said earlier, the effective, the hysterical Hezbollah was for the last 75 years letting people know that, Israel is sort of a land for the Jews because they were persecuted in Europe. And really, I find it quite extraordinary that if they were persecuted in Europe, perhaps a piece of land should have been found for them in Europe rather than in West Asia, which wasn't theirs to give. And, you know, the former Zionist ambassador to the UN holding the Bible, saying that this is our title deed to the land. And also, Hannah Ashrafi famously said that, she didn't know that God was a real estate salesman. So the reality is that, they feel that when God needs to be brought into the conversation, then they will say that, they're God's so chosen people and this land belongs to them. However, most of the Zionists are not believers in God. The founders of the Zionist entity did not believe in God. Famously, the Christmas sermon, which was presented by Pastor Ishaq, really quite eloquently put it that the Bible has been weaponized. So all these things that have happened were really clouding the vision of the ordinary people over the last 75 years. But it has become very clear that these were all lies which were put forward by the spokespersons from the Zionist entity and their supporters in the media and the politicians giving diplomatic and political cover to the Zionist entity. So all this has really been undone. And there was an article in the Jerusalem Post not long ago, which was really saying that, we worked hard for the last 75 years to tell the people one story, but within 75 days, the world is not believing what we were telling them.
Okay.
So this is quite an important aspect, which I think is a great remorse for the Zionist entity and their supporters.
Right, indeed. Well, Richard Falk, do you think the year 2024 will be one where the whole rules-based system will continue to be exposed and even start to disintegrate?
Well, I think it started to disintegrate before. It started with the new initiatives taken in the Global South, such as the formation of the BRICS, the rise of China, the effort of the U.S. to maintain the geopolitical dominance it had in the aftermath of the Cold War, the implosion of the Soviet Union. I think that all those factors were underway. It was a process of challenging this post-Cold War world that was underway. But now, with the events in the Middle East, that challenge is going to be intensified in 2024, and the outcome is not, of course, clear. The U.S. relies only these days not on rule-based principles, but on its supposed military superiority. And that's proved a disaster through ever since Vietnam, in Afghanistan, Yemen, Iraq, and several other places. So we're facing a very critical moment, and I fear that in 2024, if Israel gets backed into a corner and can't find its way out of this Gaza trap that it's made for itself, it will try to expand the war and draw these geopolitical actors into a much larger framework of conflict.
Okay. 30 seconds, Shabir. I'm so sorry, Richard. I got to give 30 seconds to Shabir. Shabir, where do you see this going as far as the Palestinian resistance? We have seen how successful they have been overall in the overall resistance. 2024.
Well, 2024, I believe, is going to be a positive outcome for the resistance. And of course, if Israel is put into corner, they may react in a sort of a mad dog way. But I think the positive sign would be that already 500,000 Israelis have left the Zionist entity. And I think if the security situation becomes even more difficult, a lot more people will voluntarily leave the Zionist entity.
And on that note, I'm so sorry. Hopefully we can talk again, but we're out of time tonight. Richard Falk, former UN Special Rapporteur in Palestine, human rights out of Santa Barbara, California, Shabir Rizzi, political analyst out of London. Thank you both for being with us. Thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. Goodbye.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough. Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran.
In the limelight.
In the United States, 20% of Hispanic and black voters and 21% of young voters now say they'll back someone other than the two main contenders for the 2024 presidential race. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. USA Today has covered this story and tells us more. President Joe Biden heads into the election year showing alarming weakness among stalwarts of the Democratic base, with Donald Trump leading among Hispanic voters and young people. One in five black voters are now saying they'll support a third-party candidate next November. In a new Suffolk University opinion poll, Joe Biden's failure to consolidate support in key parts of the coalition that elected him in 2020 has left him narrowly trailing Donald Trump, the likely Republican nominee, by 39% to 37%. Also, 17% support an unnamed third-party candidate. When seven candidates are specified by name, Donald Trump's lead inches up to 3 percentage points, 37% to 34%, with independent Robert Kennedy Jr. at the top of the third-party candidates list at 10%. The findings underscore the formidable political task that President Joe Biden faces this year to win a second term in office. Michelle Durr, a 55-year-old, a small business owner and Democrat from Alexandria, Virginia, a suburb just outside Washington, was among those surveyed. She said, "For me, it's disappointing that we have two old white guys in this race again. I want to look forward to the future." According to the Roper Center, Joe Biden now claims the support of just 63% of black voters, a precipitous decline from the 87% that he carried in the presidential race of 2020. He trails among Hispanic voters by 5 percentage points, 39% to 34%. In 2020, he had swamped Donald Trump among the demographic group by 2-1, 65% to 32%. And among voters under the age of 35, a generation largely at odds with the GOP on issues including abortion access and climate change, Donald Trump now leads 37% to 33%. Younger voters overwhelmingly backed Joe Biden in 2020. The so-called good news for President Biden is that much of the support he needs to rebuild has drifted to third-party candidates, not into the camp of his likely opponent, Donald Trump. 20% of Hispanic and black voters and 21% of young voters now said they'll back someone other than the two main contenders. Donald Trump has the support of 12% of black voters, precisely the percentage that he received back in 2020. David Paleologos, director of Suffolk's Political Research Center, said, "Although Donald Trump hasn't grown support among black voters, he has closed the deficit because third-party voters come off of Biden's support among blacks. A young voter or a person of color voting third party is a vote away from President Biden, and a vote away from President Biden is a vote for Donald Trump." The challenge for President Biden is to increase not only his support but also enthusiasm so that his backers actually cast a ballot in November. In the opinion poll, 44% of Trump supporters describe themselves as a 10 on a thermometer measuring enthusiasm, the highest possible level. Among Biden supporters, though, fewer than half, that number, 18%, call themselves a 10. Donald Trump has troubles in court amid preparations for 2 criminal trials in federal courts of law and 2 in state courts in New York and Georgia, on charges including trying to overturn a legitimate election and mishandling some of the nation's most sensitive documents after he left the White House in 2021. He's appealing decisions by a Colorado court and the Maine Secretary of State to bump him off primary ballots based on a constitutional bar to office holders who commit insurrection. So far, some analysts claim those legal travails haven't dented the former president's political support. Donald Trump, 77 years old, is barreling into the election year with increasing command of the GOP nomination contest as well as his narrow lead over Joe Biden in the general election. He's backed by 62% of likely Republican primary voters, a record high for him in the poll as the GOP field has shrunk. Former United Nations Ambassador Nikki Haley, at 13%, has edged into a distant second place over Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who continues his slide in support to 10%. Businessman Vivek Ramaswamy is at 6%, and former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is at 4%. That said, Republican voters will begin to actually cast ballots this month in the Iowa caucus on 15th of January and the New Hampshire primary on 23rd of January. Both states hold the potential to surprise, especially in the Granite State. Donald Trump now leads in New Hampshire at 44.1% in the average of recent opinion polls by 538.com website, with Nikki Haley at 25.7% and Chris Christie at 11.1%. The American News River the Hill has also covered the same story and tells us more. U.S. President Joe Biden's problems loom in November with the erosion of his coalition in the general election. The Biden team has dispatched Vice President Kamala Harris as a natural emissary to university campuses, including some historically black colleges. She's the first black and Asian American to serve as Vice President of the United States, and at age 59, she's a generation younger than Joe Biden, who is 81 years old. But the findings reveal difficulties she herself has with the Democratic base. She gets lower job approval ratings than Joe Biden among black voters, 56% compared with 68%. She lags Biden among voters younger than 35 years old, too, at 27% compared with 32%. Overall, Joe Biden's job approval rating is 39% approval, 58% disapprove. Of those, 43% strongly disapprove and 13% strongly approve. Kamala Harris's job approval rating is 33% approval, 57% disapprove. Of those, 40% strongly disapprove and 7% strongly approve. Moreover, American Muslim leaders expanded a campaign launched recently against President Joe Biden over his handling of the Israel-Palestinian conflict in the Gaza Strip. Abandon Biden campaign was first launched by Muslim leaders from Michigan, Minnesota, Arizona, Wisconsin, Florida, Georgia, Nevada, and Pennsylvania. The recent plan to actively campaign against Biden in all 50 U.S. states was announced in Chicago, Illinois, at the end of a national convention organized by the Muslim American Society and the Islamic Circle of North America. The leaders intended to guarantee Joe Biden's loss in the upcoming 2024 election over his refusal to call for a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip, where Israeli attacks have massacred more than nearly 22,000 innocent Palestinians. The campaign organizers say on their website, Joe Biden abandoning of Muslim Americans compels Muslim leaders to abandon Joe Biden in the election year.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.